Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. 2 weeks ago, a national panel of medical experts from the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force called for routine anxiety disorder screening for adults. The panel said the recommendation will help prevent mental health disorders from being undetected and untreated. Well, during tonight's Wellness Wednesday conversation, we take a look at what anxiety is and how it can be treated. My guests are Dr. Dawn Reynolds, a psychiatrist with the Ellian Wellness Center in Farmington Hills, Michigan, and Dr. Marius Commodore, medical director of behavioral health for the healthcare company 30 Madison. Lines are open if you have a question or comment about anxiety at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Reynolds, Dr. Commodore, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Fisher.
Sure thing. Dr.
Thank
Commodore.
Thank you for your interest.
Yeah, there you go. Indeed, I do have a great deal of interest in this topic as well as our listeners. So let me start with you, Dr. Reynolds. Please define anxiety for us. Kind of give us a working definition of it.
Absolutely. So I just want to start off by saying that anxiety disorders in itself is the most common mental illness disorder in the United States. So I think there was an article that you're referring to that the Washington Post put out that 40 million Americans are suffering from anxiety, and that's one out of five adults. So anxiety is when someone excessively worries, has apprehension, or expectations more days than not. So if they're feeling on edge, they feel a sense of gloom and doom and fear. And these symptoms, these are the psychological symptoms. They can also have physical symptoms, nervousness, shortness of breath, increased heart rate, palms, feeling sweaty, dry mouth, stomach issues, nervousness. These are the physical symptoms that may be expressed with anxiety. And sometimes people are not aware of what it exactly is. I can't tell you how many millions of Americans go to the emergency room every day with chest pain and shortness of breath. Thinking that they're having a heart attack, when in actuality, these are the physical manifestations of anxiety.
Dr. Commodore, there are levels to this, as they say. I mean, there are brief, fleeting feelings of anxiety for some people, and sometimes they can be severe, even considered panic attacks. What is the difference between an anxiety attack and a panic attack? Are they two sides of the same coin, or are they really different? Dr. Commodore,
I wasn't sure you were still there. So I do think they are sort of flavors. Anxiety attacks and panic attacks, from a layman's perspective, would be sort of flavors of the same illness. An anxiety attack is often feeling like the anxiety, whereas you might ordinarily experience it and be able to suppress it, feels like it has overpowered your defenses, overpowered your ability to just push it away. Often what people describe as a panic attack, if there was ever a distinction, is that it is usually a combination of feeling overwhelmed as well as the physical symptoms that Dr. Reynolds alluded to. So feeling overwhelmed and having an outbreak of sweating, a lot of feeling like your heart is beating out of your chest, feeling like you need to escape from the place you're in, but also feeling like you're rooted to the spot you're in. So you might call a panic attack a more extreme version of an anxiety attack, but from the perspective of the person who might treat you, they might not. It would be what we call a distinction without a difference.
Dr. Reynolds, what's the difference between feeling nervous and anxiety?
Well, I think that most people, as Dr. Commodore stated, laymen, they're not going to say, I have anxiety. They may say, I'm worried or I'm frustrated or I just don't feel right. So we all have times where we're starting a new job or we're starting a new school, starting a new project, and we feel a little worried. Are we going to do well? How are things going to go? That's normal, okay? When the symptoms or the thoughts, you're not able to suppress the thoughts or stop yourself from worrying about this, this is where it becomes a diagnosis of anxiety. And so that's where, as a professional, a mental health professional, we'll look over, listen to our patients, and what are they describing? What things are they experiencing? And then we come up with a diagnosis of anxiety. But a layman, just a regular common folk person may say, hey, I'm stressed, I'm worried, I'm concerned.
Well, and if I might add to
that, please, go right ahead, Dr. Commodore.
The other big, probably the other big distinction is function. So as Dr. Reynolds alluded to, all of us go to a new job or start a new activity, and we're worried about whether or not we're going to do it correctly. And we are able to suppress that and get through it. But if we're not able to suppress it, if we go to the job and we walk right up to the front door, and because we're so anxious, we turn around and go home, that has real consequences, both for your employer as well as yourself. And so that distinction is, function is a very big part of it. Function is often what brings people to our offices or into our care, but you don't have to have a disability of function before going to a mental health professional will provide you with benefits.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about anxiety. What is it? Where does it come from? How is it treated? If you have comments or questions about it, give me a call. So I do want to go back, Dr. Reynolds, to that point. And this is for both of you. And I can... And I think that having two physicians on is important. Both of you have had to take exams, for example, to become the doctors that you are today. You know, college students, high school students, you know, they've got to take, those all important tests. They've got to take SATs. They got to take LSATs. You know, the college boards, all of those other kinds of things. And then there are other kinds of things, people preparing for weddings. And as you said, you know, Dr. Reynolds, people who are starting, you know, perhaps new jobs, or even someone going to an amusement park and getting ready to get on a roller coaster. How do you determine whether or not someone is just nervous or excited, as opposed to having a clinically diagnosable episode of anxiety?
Well, that's a very good question, Mr. Fisher. So I think Dr. Commodore alluded when he stated the ability to function is what's key. So yes, as a physician, I've taken many exams, and this year I have my boards coming up for recertification, and that's a little anxiety provoking for me as well. Will I pass? Do I know enough? Have I seen enough? So, but I know that it's something that I can do, and I've taken many exams over the years, and it's just something that I know that I have to do. So, but if you liken that to a riding on the roller coaster, one would say that that's maybe you're filled with excitement. Some people are filled with excitement, and so that adrenaline, that rush they feel, that's good for them. Whereas you have others I would say, for example, my daughter, she does not like roller coasters. And so we can say that that feeling, that rush that she gets in her stomach is too much for her. And so she won't ride roller coasters.
I'm with your daughter. Yeah.
Not doing it. But the consequence is minimal, not riding on the roller coaster. There are plenty of other rides at the amusement park that she can ride and not, you know, have that gloom and doom and pit in her stomach. Anxiety disorders, they're a constellation of them. So, yes, we have generalized anxiety. That's where someone is. They're worried excessively about everything.
I was about to ask, what about that for someone who just seems to have anxiety about everything, going to a new place, meeting a new person, doing something that may be, you know, outside of their wheelhouse, new food? I mean, is that anxiety or is that nervousness? How would you characterize that?
Go ahead,
Dr. Reynolds, and then Dr. Commodore, I do want you to chime in, please.
Dr. Reynolds, please finish.
I was going to say that most people, when they do present for help, they will say that, hey, if I really think about it, I've had an anxious sort of personality or temperament my whole life. Things have always kind of put me on a little anxious side. And we know that anxiety disorder is a chronic disorder that waxes and wanes over the course of someone's life. So starting a new school, starting a new job or college per se, that may be a period of time where you have high anxiety. You know, there's a learning curve there, thresholds, being independent. So that may be a period of time where your anxiety is exacerbated and it's high. And then it may level off.
Yeah. Dr. Commodore?
I would say that, you know, going back to your roller coaster analogy, I would actually say, you know, one of the ways that a person can think, is this a problem? You know, it's one thing if you're nervous and you can't go on a roller coaster, but you can go on another ride. If you are so nervous that you're no longer accompanying your family to the amusement park, all of a sudden that's a problem because you are starting to not participate in the essential activities of life. Or say, for instance, you are a manager at, let's say you're a manager at a McDonald's, but all of a sudden you're becoming so nervous that if you have to interact with the public, you just can't do it. Well, all of a sudden, there goes your job, there goes your livelihood, there goes your ability to function. So I think that once these sets of nervousnesses, and there's no such word, so please nobody use that word, but once these nervous feelings start to actually interfere with your ability to participate in your normal activities of life, I would say that's a disorder. Now, the difference is that anxiety, if you're walking down a dark road and you hear a branch crack in the darkness, anxiety is good in that situation. The point is, if the context is out of proportion to what you're feeling, then you've probably got something that needs treatment.
But that raises another question. If you're talking about, you know, walking in the dark and a branch cracks in you know, nearby, is that anxiety or is that fear? Again, are they two sides of the same coin? If I know I'm alone and I hear that branch crack, yeah, there may be a sense of fear, but based on what I'm hearing, is that anxiety or is it fear and anxiety or is fear about it's there's so many questions about this that I have.
I think the difference there is, so the word fear and anxiety there, it's what I would say is from a general standpoint, from an everyday person on the street, that's a distinction without a difference.
Yeah.
If I hear that you were walking on the street, walking in the darkness, you heard a branch snap and you decided to increase your pace of walking, that is a perfectly reasonable thing.
Right.
If every time you hear a branch crack, you're rooted in the spot and you can't function, then that sounds to me like something that you need to treat. Context matters a lot.
Excellent, excellent explanation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is our Wednesday, our Wellness Wednesday conversation. We're talking about anxiety. If you are having challenges with anxiety, panic attacks and the like, this is definitely a program you want to pay attention to. If you have a comment or question, give us a call. KJ, calling from Annapolis, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Hi, how you doing?
Doing just fine.
Great. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had two questions. One is, it's a little different from probably the lady that answered the phone, but one is when I sleep, I like always have rapid thoughts. Like I feel like I'm not fully asleep. Like I'm always thinking and planning and just like worried about making sure everything is going to go okay or making sure everybody is okay and kind of making the worst out of situations. And then my, like, making everything a catastrophe, like thinking, you know what I mean? And then the next question was, it caused me anxiety just to even look for doctors. Like, I tried a psychology.com and just in the filter, but it can be overwhelming to the point where, like, it's been almost a year, and I just, every time I start the process over again, I get discouraged.
Mm. So you're looking for, you're looking for a black therapist, KJ?
A black lady therapist, a woman.
A black woman therapist. I need you to hold on because I've got to take a break. And I know there are a lot of people who are interested in getting that information. And I always remind our listeners that any of the resources that we are able to share with you on any of our programs here on the Daily Drum Insight segment, those resources will be posted on our website, whur.com, after 8:30. So KJ, stay on the line. Also, Lisa calling from Maryland. We're going to talk to you as well. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about anxiety on this Wellness Wednesday, and we will continue to take your calls even up until 8 o'clock. If the lines are busy, keep trying. I promise we will talk to you. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a bit. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation will be on SiriusXM in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're continuing our conversation about anxiety on this Wellness Wednesday. My guests are Dr. Dawn Reynolds, a psychiatrist with the Elian Wellness Center in Farmington Hills, Michigan, and Dr. Marius Commodore, also a psychiatrist and medical director of behavioral health for the healthcare company 30 Madison. If you have a comment, if you have a question about anxiety, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Commodore, let's start with KJ's last question. She's looking for a black woman therapist. Where can she find one?
Well, not to put Dr. Reynolds on the spot, but I was wondering whether or not, as a black woman psychiatrist herself, if she might actually have specific resources.
Okay. Well, go right ahead, Dr. Reynolds.
Well, I wanted to ask KJ, what is it about going through the psychology today that causes you such angst and distress?
When I use the filters, you know, as best as I can, they're not always up to date. And then, you know, when you contact the office, a lot of them will let you contact them directly to get back to you. Some of them don't get back to you. And then they want, like, payment before you can, or set up before they even, like, talk to you. And then you have to go through the whole process, you know, filling it out, making sure it's a good fit. And then there's so many, and they don't always have pictures, so I feel awkward calling and saying, like, is this a person of color? Just because that's part of, like, anxiety, being black. And so I just want somebody that can that I can relate to and talk through these things.
Okay. And I understand. I think it's very important, I think, finding someone that shares the same cultural experiences that we have, the same nuances, is very important. But I would encourage you and empower you that it's okay to, when you call the office, to say, hey, is this African American? Do you have African American therapist or psychiatrist here, because that is what you're looking for, and there is nothing wrong with asking that question.
No. Okay.
I am not.
I would also.
Go ahead, Dr. Commodore.
No, no, no. Please finish.
Go finish, Dr. Reynolds, and we'll have Dr. Commodore jump right in.
Okay. So I am not from the Maryland, D.C. area, so I do not specifically know of black therapists in the area. However,
is it like a network, like a website, like where
And let me if you don't mind, real quick, KJ. One of the things, because I am literally Googling black therapists, and if you do that, there are pages and pages of organizations as well as individuals, and many of them women, for example, and you are in the D.C. metropolitan area. I would recommend that, short of a specific site, to just Google black therapists or black psychiatrists or black therapists in Maryland or D.C.
Okay.
Yeah, and but I think because they are there, and while mm-hmm. they may not be available as much as they are in other parts of the country, we are talking about the D.C. Metro, and there are there are many black therapists, psychiatrists, as well as clinical counselors as well, licensed clinical counselors who may be able to help you. Yeah, Dr. Commodore, you did want to make another comment.
I also wanted to say that, and sometimes in your search, you know, we can make the search so big and so broad that it can overwhelm us. And so I would start small. So ask a family member if they've ever, you know, sought help, or they know anyone who sought help. Ask if you have any kind of religious involvement. Ask a member of your church or your synagogue or your mosque whether or not they have any recommendations. If you have a primary care physician or someone who you've gone to before that you can trust, you know, ask them for a recommendation, so that as opposed to searching into the void, if you will, mm-hmm. bring the search closer to make it people who are closer at hand. Dr. Reynolds said at the beginning of this program, 40 million people have anxiety in the United States. Many people don't talk about it. Sometimes you have to take that extra courageous step of opening up to someone and saying, I have this problem. And then all of a sudden people go, oh my God, yes, I had this problem and this person really helped me. So use the network that you do have. So in addition to what our host said, use the network you have and go to them directly and say, hey, I'm having this problem. You know, who might you know who might assist me?
Yeah. And also, I'm looking here. You may want to try blackfemaletherapists.com. There's a whole directory. Whole bunch of sisters there.
That's exactly what I need to hear.
Yeah, there you go. Real quick, Dr. Reynolds, if you could also address her initial question. She said that when she's in bed last night, she doesn't feel like she's able to fully get to sleep because there are so many things that she is concerned about, maybe feeling anxiety about. Real quick, if you can address that before we move on.
Well, yes. KJ, I wanted to know, so you stated, but you didn't actually pose a question. So are you concerned that this is anxiety for you?
Yes. Is this a form of anxiety?
It is. Yes, it is. It is. And so are you able to, so this is what Dr. Commodore was stating, so it's impairing your ability to sleep at night, and then does that impair your ability to function during the day, whether it's at work or school or caring for loved ones?
To sleep, like, to fully feel like I'm resting. You know, I look at the clock, it's like every hour, 2 hours, and the next thing you know, it's time to get up. And I feel like I don't feel like I've rested. So sometimes I take melatonin.
Does that help?
I got to take more than, well, I don't know what, sometimes it does, if I take enough.
Okay. Well, what would be enough?
Like, I think it's like 10 milligrams. It's in a bottle. I have to look at it, but maybe like two of those.
Okay. How often is this occurring for you? Is this a nightly basis?
All the time, like during the sleep, even during the day, if I want to take a nap, I'm just constantly like thinking about work, thinking about what I should be doing. Like, I feel like I kind of don't deserve to even be able to take a nap in the middle of the day. And then, you know, I'm just always thinking. I feel like I'm always thinking.
Yeah. Real quick, Dr. Reynolds, just a quick word of advice. I've got a lot of people on the line.
Okay.
Okay. So, KJ, yes, this is anxiety, and I would say that the next step would be to go onto the website and the Black Female Therapist website, start calling a few offices and see whether or not they're taking, accepting new patients, so that you can start discussing and getting to the root of what's actually going on.
Okay. Thank you so much. I'm sorry to take so much time.
That's quite all right. We want to make sure that you are able to make the best decision regarding your health. So thank you very, very much. Let me go to Lisa. Lisa, calling from Maryland. Lisa, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking the call. I just had a question regarding adolescence and possible anxiety, where I have a 10-year-old who noted to me verbally they were going over a lesson in class and stated that, oh, mommy, I think I have anxiety. And, of course, I drove down as to why. And she responded to me that, you know, just sometimes I think about things and I worry about it. And then I worry about something else. And then I wonder what's going to happen next and what's going to happen next. And while I don't necessarily notice it inhibiting her from doing things, I do notice, like, some nervous activity at home. Just in, like, locking doors obsessively or checking the light is off and going back to ensure that the light has been turned off and, you know, stating things to me like, oh, I have to do this because I don't feel like I can stop. So at what point, you know, would it be to that she would need to, that I should be concerned that I should address this, or is this normal for kids of that age? And
let me see what Dr. Commodore has to say. Dr. Commodore, what are you hearing from Lisa?
I think what I'm hearing, first of all, is appropriate concern from a parent. So I think, one, you should congratulate yourself for even entertaining the idea. Secondly, you know, you are part of the best knowledge of your child. You don't think that it's interrupting his or her life, and that is a good place to be, because you would like to notice these things before it becomes a problem. Third, I would say, continue to send the message to your child that he or she can talk to you anytime, and that you're trying to understand what is it that makes you go to this, you know, go back and check the lights. And do you think that it would be okay if we left the house and turned the lights on? Like, do you think that would be all right? So continue to be able to open that dialogue. It is hard to know when is the right time to pull the trigger. You could ask directly, do you think you want to talk to somebody about this? Talk to somebody about how you might unravel this. Or do you think this is something you'd like to have someone to talk about? Or is us talking about it okay for you? Kids have a lot of knowledge about sort of what they think and need, and I think part of his or her comfort is going to come from knowing that you are willing to engage in the conversation.
Okay. Lisa, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about anxiety tonight. So, Dr. Reynolds, what is the difference between anxiety and, say, PTSD? Obviously, probably one of the more, you know, common examples are veterans coming back from serving overseas. They may have been in in a theater of war, for example. Is PTSD, again, a form of anxiety or something completely different?
Well, with our new classification, our Bible, so to speak, for mental health disorders, our DSM-5, PTSD is falling under this umbrella of anxiety disorders. So we have generalized anxiety disorder, we have panic disorder, we have obsessive compulsive disorder, social anxiety disorder, and then post-traumatic stress disorder.
When it comes to anxiety, we've heard the term things that may be, you know, triggering, for example. Is it, do you find that anxiety may be caused by something that may have happened to someone in the recent or long past? And does identifying what that thing or incident may be help in treating anxiety?
Well, we do know that for some anxiety disorders, there is a genetic or an inheritability component to it. So people will say that it tends to run in families. But we also know that for some people, yes, a trauma can start triggering anxiety. So specifically for post-traumatic stress disorder, someone may have a, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, we think of veterans, but it doesn't, you don't necessarily have to serve in the military
right.
to receive a diagnosis of PTSD. But, and you also don't have to have just one stressor. So for some people, they can have multiple stressors, multiple traumas, and never experience or get the be diagnosed with PTSD. But for others, whether or not it's that genetic component and you put environment and then a trauma, and it just takes one experience or episode to lead to a diagnosis of PTSD.
Go ahead, Dr. Commodore.
And to add to that, you know, what we often find is that sometimes patients will feel like they have gotten whatever is the trauma behind them, but then a seemingly innocuous activity, a car backfiring, a word said to a person in a certain tone, perhaps a touch to the body that was not meant in a way that was threatening, can be an experience that sort of breaks the floodgate, if you will, and lets some of these feelings come back to the fore. We're also beginning to learn more and more about a term that is not in the DSM, but a kind of a concept that we're calling chronic PTSD, which is that people who grow up in unsafe, unstable situations, think bad neighborhoods, think sometimes rural areas where you had unstable families. Think of the opioid epidemic that is affecting both urban and rural areas. So think about the home that a person growing up in those kinds of homes might deal with. So it's a thousand cuts. There's no one particular triggering event, but that changes the way that person interacts with the world for the rest of their lives. And so while it is not PTSD in the chronic way that we think, in the classic way that we think about it, it is certainly anxiety-ridden responses to trauma.
Yeah, and another example of that could be in someone living in, you know, a big city where there's food insecurity, housing insecurity, violence on a weekly or even daily basis. And we have had those discussions on this program before, so I do understand your point. Let me go back to the phone lines. Marcia calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Hi, yes. My name is actually Marcia.
Marcia, okay. Sorry about that.
No problem. I just wanted to add my 2 cents. I'm also a mental health professional, and I'm a clinician of color, and I wanted to guide the young lady. I think her name was KJ. There's also a directory called Clinicians of Color where you can find therapists, social workers, and such who can identify with your race or, you know, creed or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
But I also just wanted to add that, you know, dealing with anxiety and various things, a lot of times therapy is the first avenue. However, there is a difference between psychiatric nurse practitioner, psychiatrist, psychologist. There's so many different professionals that a person can see. So I don't want people to be limited to thinking that they can only receive treatment or services if they see a therapist. There's also prescribers who provide therapy and not necessarily just medication.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Marcia. And I will post the this website, clinicianscolor.org, on our website. It looks like a really wonderful, wonderful resource. And thank you for your comments. Let me ask you this, Dr. Reynolds, from meditation to medication. Talk to me about treating anxiety.
Mr. Fisher, I'm glad you asked that. So, yes, I am a psychiatrist, so that distinguishes me from, let's just say, a therapist or social worker, psychologist. So I've gone to medical school, which means that I can prescribe medication.
You're a physician?
Yes.
Yes.
But you also have nurse practitioners and physician assistants. They can prescribe as well. Yes, I am. I have been trained to listen to symptoms, listen to the patient, and prescribe medication. However, I like to take a holistic or integrative approach, and so to try to get to the root cause of what's going on. And so, just because someone is having these constellation of symptoms. Anxiety, if you will, because that's our topic for today, and to not just prescribe an anti-anxiety medication, but to also, so a multiple modality, so medication, therapy, yoga, exercise, taking a mind-body and spirituality approach. But I practice an integrative psychiatry practice where I'm not just jumping to medications, but I want to do lab work to understand where someone is nutritionally. Lots of times these are things that are overlooked. For example, if I prescribe an anti-anxiety medication, which will increase serotonin in someone's brain, we know that if someone has low vitamin D, which is needed to naturally make serotonin, it doesn't matter how much antidepressant or Zoloft or Lexapro I may give the patient, it's not going to be enough. I'm not getting to the root cause of what may be just a nutritional imbalance or deficiency for them.
Yeah. Dr. Commodore, as it relates to how we started this program, when we were talking about the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force calling for anxiety disorder screening for adults, how might that screening be administered? And isn't it possible that if someone has an anxiety disorder, that by virtue of the fact that they realize that they are going for an anxiety screening could be triggering for them?
So that is complicated. You're right. A anxiety screening could be triggering, but if I don't necessarily want to defend the profession per se, but I would say that screening is better than not screening.
Mm-hmm.
you know, we there is a correlate in screening for depression. So if you have gone for a checkup in the last 2 or 3 years, you will find that many practices will administer, it's a pen and paper a test, if you, it's not really a test, it's a pen and paper assessment called the PHQ-9, and they do that once a year. And the reason for that is because administering that helps pick up depression among people who may not even have known what they were experiencing was depression. They may come with problems sleeping. They may come with problems with diet. You know, they're losing weight because they're not hungry. They may come with problems feeling tired and lethargic. And so that screening has picked up a lot of depression where we might not have. Similarly, I think the national, you know, trying to move towards a national standard where we use some kind of instrument to screen for anxiety, and the way it will show up will usually be if you go for a checkup perhaps once a year. A lot of women, for instance, tend to go more to their OBGYN than they tend to go to their physical doctors, to other kinds of physical doctors, and maybe in your OBGYN's office you will get a screening once a year. I think making it systematic will do a few things. One, you'll pick up cases that may have gone undiscovered before. But the other thing is it will start to normalize the idea that these are problems, A, that you can bring up, B, that can be treated, and C, that are important. And I think that is part of the rationale for going with this kind of screening, because right now we're not doing any screening. So I think as challenging as a screening might be for a particular patient, it is better that their medical professional know that they're dealing with this problem than not know.
Let me take one more phone call. Tony calling from Fredericksburg. Tony, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Tony, are you there?
Hi.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yes, I am. I am here. And I hope everybody is doing well. As I said, my name is Tony Marshall. And I've got anxiety. My anxiety isn't something that is ordinary for everybody else. I've experienced a lot of trauma in my past. I went on Ancestry.com. As it normally says, you know, you never know what you find out. To find out that, you know, I don't have, I should just say I'm not even American. The family that I knew I had or that I thought I had, I don't have.
Well, Tony, let me, forgive me for interrupting you. I am really short on time. Do you have a question that the doctors may be able to assist you with in the next minute
or
so?
I do have a question. When a person does have anxiety and they try to seek assistance, and I know I'm speaking for others that have anxiety, sometimes they are misjudged or it's automatically that they might be upset or something, and they're not. They're trying to get some help because I'm a veteran, and I don't get that type of help.
So let me ask you, what's your question?
What do you do? What do you do
when you're not getting the kind of help that you're seeking, Dr. Reynolds? If you have a quick word of advice for Tony.
Tony, I'm sorry that you're struggling with anxiety and you feel misheard and misjudged. But I would like to ask, are you receiving care at your local VA, your local veterans hospital administration?
Well, I tried, but it seems like things are taken, you know, misunderstood, or maybe they just can't treat me because I'm going to be honest, I don't really feel comfortable with it because it seems as if it's more so of trying to put me in a box of saying there's something more wrong with me than what there is. And when you try to explain why you have anxiety, it's like no one wants to hear it. It's like you have to shout it out for people to literally say. Like, I've got anxiety because I've went through a lot of trauma in my life. I've tried to explain this, like, mm-hmm. when I just got on. Like, hey, look, I just found out that I literally was pretty much just taken from where I was.
Yeah. I don't have a lot of time. Dr. Commodore, do you have anything that you could share with Tony really briefly that
could be assistance? I have a very unsatisfying answer, but I would simply say to keep at it. I think that if the VA system isn't necessarily providing the help that you need, you know, find it in other places. You know, you do a favor to yourself by continuing to scratch and claw and find your way to help. This evening we have heard about resources like Clinicians of Color or Black Therapists or other groups like that. There are persons, yes, like Dr. Reynolds, who specialize in integrative approaches. So they're not just thinking about medication, they're thinking about body, mind, and spirit. So try and find resources like that. It is a matter of you having to continue, because you are the person who is suffering, and so you have to continue the search. And that is an unsatisfying answer, I know that. But I think it's also
It's not an unsatisfying answer, because I am a minority, and I do feel discriminated against with a lot of things to where I can't get that assistance.
Well, let me suggest, and I want to thank Marcia for suggesting clinicians of color.org. I've been kind of scrolling through since she mentioned it, and there are literally, just in this area alone, in the DC metropolitan area, dozens and dozens of therapists, men and women, and at all levels, from therapists all the way up to psychiatrists and everything in between. I highly recommend that anyone who is looking for help check out that website, clinicians of color.org, and of course I will be posting it on whur.com after 8:30 tonight. Dr. Dawn Reynolds and Dr. Marius Commodore, thank you so very, very much for all of your insight, your expertise, and your help. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for your interest.
Yeah. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, October 5th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.